Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Do you remember? 720 WGN, Pete McMurray in the Allstate Showcase Studios, in for Steve Cochran all week. It's great to be here. Merry Christmas, everybody. Happy Hanukkah. Day five, Mark Carmen.
I believe it's day three.
Day three. When do we light the candle? Tonight? At sundown?
There's a candle being lit. There's a candle right in front of you. I want to, you're surrounded by Jews, Pete. You know this, right?
I understand that. Joey Gelman behind the glass. Lise, are you Jewish? Kind of.
Honorary Jew?
I'm Jewish.
Jewish.
All my friends are Jewish.
There is no traffic on the road today.
Isn't it beautiful?
It took me 7 minutes to get to work. Usually it takes about 15. There is nobody out today. We're the only ones working.
But they're all in their bed listening to the show. Wow. You know that, right?
You know, I don't. When I left WGN a year and a half ago, I didn't think I would come back and work with a Mark Carmen. We've never worked together.
You know, it's emotional for me too, Pete. I thank you for bringing that to the forefront here. You know, one of my favorite things about you is occasionally we would cross paths in the old David Kaplan show.
Yep.
Right, and you'd be walking out, and we had an intern by the name of Steve Sufferdin.
Yes.
Which I used to call him Everybody Sufferdin, and I'd have a whole song from bump 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 bump, and he wanted to shake your hand
every night,
every single. Night.
Every night.
And you negotiated with him. You said, you know what? Why don't we go fist pound four nights a week? One night a week, we'll go handshake.
Right.
And I thought that was the best move in radio history.
We had to sit down and have the talk, but I love Steve. Always had a great attitude.
Right.
But he wanted to shake my hand every night when he walked out of the studio, and then I had to have the talk.
Right. You had to let him know, like, look, I understand you appreciate what I do, but we don't have to shake hands every night.
Right. We don't need to do that.
Yeah.
some of the stories that we're following today, 11 people killed over the weekend, at least 30 shot. The holiday weekend, 41 people shot. That's ridiculous. Just crazy.
It's sad, really.
Singer George Michael passed away at the age of 53. Heart condition? Is that what they're saying?
That's suddenly, right. Heart failure.
Heart failure. Yeah. Just suddenly passed away. And now you think about all the songs that George Michael had. Wham! All the singles. He sold over 100 million albums.
Think about how young he was when those hits first came out.
Right.
30 years ago.
In the hair with Wham.
I think I've watched the video Too Funky at least a million times. It's so beautiful.
How about Freedom? Remember that tune?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. The man's a legend. Very, very, I mean, talk about an interesting dude, right?
I think the last time I saw him was he did the Summer Olympics a few years ago, right? Remember he sang at the Summer Olympics?
Okay.
That was probably his last public appearance, I want to say, that people really remember.
Well, he had the, what was the last tour, like 07 or something like that? Am I wrong about that? I feel like that's correct.
He canceled a bunch of dates in 2011 because of pneumonia, which seemed weird.
It was, with the drugs and the sex in public, and his career took a turn. It really did.
But he had fun.
And how about the weather? Here's my biggest problem today. I have Christmas lights outside. Is today going to be the warmest day? Do I need to take the Christmas lights off today? Because I don't want to wait until, usually you wait until after New Year's, and that's a week from today, and it's going to be 30 degrees.
I mean, I walked out
20 degrees.
Whatever it was this morning, and I felt like I should go to the beach. I mean, it was like a summer rain. I felt like, can I go shoot hoops outside here? This is beautiful.
Today's high is 54.
That's ridiculous.
54.
It'll be 20 degrees colder tomorrow, Pete.
Yes, but Wednesday we're back up to 44.
Right. Yep.
This is so Chicago.
You know what's happening, right? We're going to be the coast. Miami's going to be Chicago. I don't want to get into a whole big climate change here at 6:12 the first time we've ever worked it together, Pete. But if it's 54 degrees on December 26th, you can't tell me that's normal.
I don't have a problem with it. I have to be honest. Because think about it. If you had a mild winter and then a nice warm summer and then a mild fall, I mean, I'm good with the mild winter now.
Have you ever considered moving, perhaps, to a warmer climate?
See, that's the thing. You love Chicago. You don't want to move, but you hate the weather during the wintertime.
Right.
And you can't put up with it as you get older. It's like February. Why am I still here? How come I didn't book a vacation?
You know that more people moved out of Illinois this year than ever before. 38,000 people said bye-bye.
It's pathetic. It really is.
We got, I mean, you just touched on it all. We've got crime. We've got, we've got all sorts of stuff going on. Our taxes aren't ideal. The weather.
But how do you not love this city during the summertime?
No, you love it.
I mean, I love it during the winter. Last week had many nights out, and just the Christmas lights, driving down Michigan Avenue. It's beautiful.
I mean, if there was snow out there, I'd love the city so much I'd go out and do a snow angel, but there's not. We just got puddles.
So back to my original question, and Dave Schwann, let me ask you this. Do I take down my Christmas lights today at 54 degrees? Because the rain's going to stop, correct?
Yes, the rain will stop, and we'll be decreasing clouds, as a matter of fact, later today and a bit breezy, but a high of 55. Temps falling, my answer is no. Leave them up for a little while, because it's going to feel like Christmas in December later in the week, and, you know, as for next week, who knows? As you say, it's Chicago.
Oh,
but I'd leave them up, you know, just for the sake of tradition, if nothing else, through the new year. You want to take them down?
When you take down those Christmas lights when it's cold, suddenly you accidentally hit a branch and it whips you in the face, and you have the scar for a week from taking down the Christmas lights.
Along with the sting of the branch hitting you for a week.
Yeah.
You don't want that.
No, it's tough.
What's going on with the family? I mean, what does the family think? This can't be just a solo
decision.
Oh, my
wife said, absolutely not.
Okay.
You got to leave them up. If it was her, she would do like they do downtown. She'd leave them up all year long. She loves the white lights out front. And by the way, it's only one tree. We have one tree with white lights, but it's wrapped all the way around like the trees downtown.
Who does that wrapping?
I do. Yeah, I studied it.
Yeah, you do.
Seriously, I've talked about this on the radio before. I studied the trees downtown because it's an art. The way they wrap them up and the branches come out, you can't have the wires hanging.
So I've been with you for 15 minutes, and I've already figured out that you're an incredible detail guy. You whipped out a charger that I've never seen before. I got five options.
Yes.
And now we got details on the tree light. I'm impressed.
How about inside decorations, Pete? You got a lot of stuff inside the house?
Yes, we do.
Tree and...
That's my wife's deal.
Stuff hanging on the walls?
She likes to put them up right after Thanksgiving, the Friday after Thanksgiving. Guaranteed the tree comes down either today or tomorrow. Gone. Out. Yes, clean out the house. This is the week, man. This is the week where we clean, we set our goals for the new year. We get, you know, we cleanse ourselves.
Do you have a McMurray sit-down goal meeting session?
Absolutely.
Do you really?
I do, yeah.
That's awesome.
We had an expert on last week talking about goals for the new year. Mm-hmm. Realistic goals, only do three or four so you don't let yourself down, and write them down.
Yeah.
Write them down.
Yeah.
I'm a goal guy. I put them in my phone so I can look at them throughout the year.
That's awesome. How about I think I need to make a move like that. Like, but I phone's not going to be good enough for me because I'll lose it. Technology's not my thing. I need it.
Put it in the notes section.
I want it on the mirror in front of me. I got to see it every day. When I go and brush my teeth, the 3 out of the 5 days that I do that, I want to see those goals. Bam, right in my face.
True fact. Arnold Schwarzenegger every single year wrote down his New Year's resolutions on note cards, and he had that file, and he put them in that the little file.
Okay.
The 3x5 note cards, and at the end of the year, he'd check them off. He'd look him back up and say, okay, what did I accomplish?
All right, it's on. I knew there was a reason I was coming in this week, and now life
You're
is
You're learning about Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Well,
yes.
Goal setting.
Goal
okay.
setting. Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran, 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. Talking about goals, this woman that we had on last week, Gina Murata, her website is ginamurata.com. She talks about tips to close out 2016. Do you do that to close out 2016? You close her out?
Apparently, I'm not a closer out.
You're a single guy in your 40s. You're not closing anything out.
No, there's no C in my A and B type of thing here going on. I like the concept, though. Let's hear more.
She talks about looking back at 2016. Ask yourself four questions. What were the successes? What were the surprises? What were the failures? And what were the lessons? Then ask yourself, what was the big lesson that came out of all four of those? So even if you had failures, you got to find out what the lesson was for 2016. We all had failures and successes. You don't want too many high highs or too many low lows.
Right, right. Well, we're talking about the journey here, right? It's not a flat line. We're on the roller coaster. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're going up, sometimes you're going down, but you're always learning, something like that?
Yes.
Okay.
You're always learning.
Right.
Any big successes, failures in 2016?
I think I changed my relationship with fear this year, Pete. If I may go slightly into the personal life, fear is I'm using it more as a guider and something to approach rather than something to stop me. Now, does that make sense to you? Sometimes you get super scared, you freeze and you don't do it. Like perhaps it's. If you like to put it in a very simple term, like in a dating life, oh, should I call this girl? No, I'm nervous. Well, if you're nervous, that's probably the exact call that you should be making or the exact thing you should be doing or the exact interview that I should be trying to get or that type, or the exact person I should be talking to. So if I'm feeling the fear, it's like, that's where you need to go, man. Right there, right now, the sooner the better.
I'm trying to think. There was a motivational speaker that I saw when I was in college at Bradley University. Well, God, what was his name? He said, he gave some advice. If you're afraid of something, jump right in. Just jump right in. Don't even think about it. Make it happen.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I can see his face right now. Zig Ziglar. Anybody hear of Zig Ziglar? Anybody?
Is that the guy that, did he open up Zingerman's, the deli in Ann Arbor?
He's a motivational speaker, and he said, if you're afraid of something, just jump right in.
Right.
So if you're afraid of public speaking, just do it.
Right.
Get up there and do it, and once you do it, you're going to be okay.
It's the approach versus the avoid.
Right.
That's an approach. You're scared. Go. Now. Better.
So you got to close out 2016. Again, the four things, the four questions you need to ask yourself. Successes, what were the surprises, failures, and lessons, and figure out the lessons.
You got this in a document. Can you forward that on to me, please?
And three tips to map out 2017. Set your goals. 3 to 4. Keep it realistic. Okay? So you got to narrow it down. I'm a guy that has maybe 10 or 15, but I have at least 4 huge goals that I want to accomplish in the next year.
Do you have the BHAG?
The BHAG. What's the BHAG?
The big, hairy, audacious goal. What's your BHAG?
I have realistic goals.
Right. You can have the realistic, but I think you should have one BHAG, Pete. One big, hairy, audacious, whatever that would be. I don't know. You don't have to come up with it on the spot here.
Okay.
But I want you to put like that would be, like, I will be big, hairy, audacious and stand there and puff my chest out if I hit this one.
Probably a TV gig.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
Full time.
Yeah. Bam.
In addition to radio. Radio's number one.
Okay.
Okay. So set your goals. Acknowledge your major blocks. What are your blocks?
The minutia.
What are you afraid of?
The minutia for me.
The thing is, in one of the things that we discussed with Gina Murata last week about this is people are afraid to write things down because you do inventory of your life and you find out what your fears are. And you talk about your fears. You don't want to confront them and you just don't want to sit down and write them out. Because you do have to do inventory.
Well, because then you're setting yourself up, I might not actually succeed, and then I'm going to feel sadness because I have failure.
Disappointment.
Right.
No one wants to disappoint themselves.
Let's numb ourselves out and not put anything down and do nothing with our lives. There's a plan.
And what is your mantra for 2017?
What is my mantra?
The year of Pete.
Okay.
But I could never say that in front of my wife because it's always about my wife, Sarah. What is your mantra? You got to have a mantra. What are we going to do this year?
I'm going to dance.
The year of travel. Okay. The year of me time. I don't know what it is, but you need to figure that out.
How about the year of truth? I'm going to speak more truths in 2017 than I ever have. How's that? Does that work?
I don't know if that's a good idea. I don't know what it is.
Well, it would change things.
But I love this time of year because, number one, everyone's going to be cleaning this week, and it's like you're cleansing, and then you can map out your road for the next year.
I like it.
You see how I lowered my voice and whispered and made it sound super serious? It
got real.
Yes, it did get real.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the time. If you're listening right now, you've never done goals, just write down 3 things you want to accomplish next year. Write them down, and you write them down, they start to become reality. Okay.
Take this moment as faith. There's a reason why you're up at 6:25 on the day when everyone is sleeping and Pete is telling you what to do.
You want to get a new car? You want to get a new house? You want to get a new job? You write it down. You start thinking about it mentally. And it becomes reality.
I just got the pen out, just for the record.
Okay.
Pen is out. I never have the pen out. Pen's out.
New job? Who do you want to work for? What's it want to be? What do you want?
I got a long list.
Paint a picture.
I'll see you at 10.
Pete McMurray, in for Steve Cochran, Allstate Showcase Studios at 720 WGN. Keep writing.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran this week. Our next guest, Chris Schoenberger, is the head chef and owner of Barbecued Productions, WeGrillItAll.com, where they bring you food. They will bring food to your house. You don't have to do a thing. They specialize in backyard barbecues for any and all events. We'd like to welcome back Chris. Thanks for coming in, man. How you doing?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Who cooked yesterday?
Actually, my mother-in-law did.
Really?
Yeah.
You had a day off.
It was very, very nice. She made me a New York strip steak with king crab legs.
Really?
It was awesome.
She's a good cook?
Oh, it was probably the best thing ever.
I feel like I could never invite over a chef or you to my house because I feel like you'd always be judging me with my food preparation, critiquing.
I stayed on the couch, hung out with my son all day, and just enjoyed the day.
Is it hard for you to go out and have a nice meal because you have high expectations?
I really don't. I actually love going out. I love going to restaurants. I go out almost every single day to a new restaurant or try a different restaurant in the area.
Okay.
But I go out all the time.
Got it. And is there a group of chefs that kind of hang out with each other?
In the barbecue industry, yeah. There's a Chicagoland Barbecue Society where we all kind of
You're kidding.
Yeah, there's a Facebook page for it. And it's just all barbecue guys on there.
So, barbecue guys.
Yeah.
You get together during the summertime, maybe in July, and barbecue together.
Yeah, there's actually a formation group out of Kansas City. So
okay.
It's Kansas City Barbecue Society. And we all just kind of get together. There's some meetings that we do every quarter. So it's pretty cool.
Why did barbecue originate? I don't know if it originated in Kansas City, but you think barbecue and Kansas City, they go hand in hand.
Yeah, Kansas City is a pretty big region as well as Texas. A lot of people like Carolina, especially out here. Carolina is very vinegary.
Okay.
But it's got a unique different thing to it. But Kansas City is one of my favorites.
I got to tell you, the vinegar barbecue sauce, love it.
Yeah.
I mean, I worked in Kansas City for a couple of years. It's unbelievable. Gates, I mean, long, long list. Jack Stack.
Really?
I mean, you can go into a gas station. That's one of the famous
ones. Yep.
Oklahoma Joe's. You walk into the gas station, it is a line out the door. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So you can get gas in Kansas City and barbecue.
Oklahoma Joe's is probably the original staple out there, and it's one of my favorites. It's amazing.
So back in 2009, you have such a great story. And when you were laid off, you were thinking, okay, I'm going to start my own business. I'm going to do a barbecue thing. Do you travel to Kansas City? Do you travel to Texas?
I've gone to Texas for one wedding. We actually do weddings all over the United States, so we'll go anywhere. People pay the travel and lodging, and we go anywhere. So I did New York City. I did Pennsylvania, Indiana, Texas,
okay,
Kansas City. So we'll go anywhere.
We talked about goal setting. So back in 2009, when you were laid off and you're thinking, okay, what am I going to do next? Did you write down goals or did you just kind of do it?
I did everything on the fly. I didn't even write a business plan. I literally
throw the goals out the window.
Yeah.
Forget it.
I literally did nothing. I literally opened up the restaurant with just a little bit of money I had in my pocket. And I had a belief that if I start everything with the bare necessities and upgrade as the business grows, that we'll become a little bit more successful. So our first bar stools, I got at a hardware store on clearance, and every morning we had to tighten them up with a screwdriver. And that's how we opened up the bar and restaurant, and now we're getting ready to open up our second location.
Well, you got active though, right?
Yeah.
You're just doing stuff.
Right.
That's how you got to start.
I mean, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
So in 2009, you get laid off.
Yep.
And is it true that, I think the story that you told me last time was, you were cooking for a friend or a backyard barbecue? How did it start?
Yeah, so I was working for the local police department. I got laid off with the whole economy crashing. And so I had a couple buddies that worked for the police department that had me doing different events. And a buddy of mine came over to a party, and I was cooking a bunch of food. And he's like, hey, you're pretty good at that. You want to cook for my wedding? And I was like, sure, because I don't turn down any type of a challenge.
No.
So like a week before, I'm like, hey, I'm going to start buying food for your wedding. How many people you got? He's like, oh, 350. And I'm like, okay, I guess I should have asked that a while ago. So I called up my brother and I was like, hey, I think I bit off more than I can chew. I need your help. And so we started at like 6 in the morning and we cooked for my buddy's wedding and we did phenomenal. Everyone was asking for my cards and I'm like, I just do this for fun. Like, and so I started handing out my cards for my job that I had at the time, which was a cable guy. I was a sales guy for a cable company.
A cable guy.
And people started calling me left and right and I'm like, all right, maybe I got something here. And so this is kind of how it unrolled like that.
God, that's just wonderful, man.
Yeah.
And here you are. What year was that? 2009?
2009, yep. And then 2014 is when we opened up the restaurant. Our restaurant was originally 1,300 square feet.
Okay.
And we've expanded 4 times, and now we're just under 7,000 square feet.
Now, when did you get to that point where you could quit your side job? Did you keep your job while
doing
the business?
No, actually, so when I
opened... Or you were all in?
Yeah, when I opened the restaurant, I jumped in head first. Like I told you last time, my mom is the one who kind of gave me the idea and said, why don't you just do this?
Oh, yeah.
And so she was going to help me out. She, like I said, she died the night we opened, so she helped me get to that point. I'm a big believer in signs.
Mm-hmm.
The night of our grand opening, we had a couple signs from my mother that came by that night. And so it kind of made me like, all right, this is probably what I'm supposed to be doing. And still to this day, when I have rough days, whatever, you can still see those signs coming back.
Right.
So it kind of keeps us going along. And one thing that I always did is mom always said that if I did everything with love, I would never fail in life. So I make sure I do everything at the restaurant with love, and I treat my employees as if they're my own family.
That's great.
It just kind of trickles downhill.
Jeez, man, that's the way it should be.
Yeah. So we try to take, you know, like every year for our employees, we take them to like a Cubs game, or, you know, last Christmas we took them, everyone, to a Skybox at the Hawks game. So we try to make sure the employees are always feeling that they're part of the team as well. And it just, it makes it a good company.
Shouldn't that be the way that every business should be run?
I really feel like that. You know, if you have employees that are happy, your guests are happy, right, and the business owner's happy,
and they want to work harder for you.
Absolutely.
I don't get it.
Absolutely.
So I mean, I've worked for some wonderful companies and some really bad people.
Yeah. I worked for a place where I was just a number, and if you left, you were still, they'd find somebody else to be that number. So we try to take things a little bit differently and do different things.
And you're located in Third Lake, which is near Gurnee, right?
Yeah, it's right off of the tilt, right off the highway.
Any traffic today driving in?
We got here in 28 minutes. So my driver,
nobody drives in from Gurnee in 28 minutes.
Well, we had a couple little issues at the restaurant, and so I told my driver, I was like, we got to get down there quick. We left at 6:30, and I'm like, I got to be there at 6:15. Sorry, we left at 6. I was like, I got to be there at 6:15, and so it was quick.
That's great, man.
Yeah, so it was really nice.
How about that? You're working this morning, getting things ready, and then coming in to do radio, getting dry. It's impressive.
Yeah, so in the restaurant business, I mean, there's always something that goes wrong. So, you know, for me, it's when the storms happen, we're cooking overnight.
Okay.
So it's like, all right, is my smoker's going to go off? Because we use an electric fired smoker. So it's like, all right, you know, is our power going to go out? Is going to knock it out? So I was up at 2 o'clock in the morning, checking the smokers, make sure they're still going.
Wow.
Chris Schoenberger, Barbecued Productions. You can go to WeGrillItAll.com. What's the biggest mistake when people prepare meat? Overcooking? Undercooking?
I think with barbecue, it can be a little bit of both. There's a certain temperature that we like to take our meat to. So, like, for example, our brisket, we take to 191, and we pull it at 191 exactly. Same thing with our pulled pork. So we try to make sure it's within the time frame, but with meat, if you're going to go in the oven, a lot of people go too hot, too fast, and too long.
Okay.
Where we do low and slow. So we're at 209 degrees for 14 to 16 hours.
So do you do oven first and then throw it on the grill?
At the restaurant, no, we do all smoker.
Okay.
But at my house, I still have a smoker for everything, so I'll smoke anything. I mean, I smoke desserts, I'll smoke a cake. Smoke cookies.
Sounds like a buddy I had in college. Wait a second. Hold on.
Smoked chocolate chip cookies are probably one of the best things you can ever have.
What about for the normal person that doesn't have a smoker like me? Can I put it in the, do you put it in the oven to kind of speed
it
up so a little bit, slow cook?
When we have people that buy stuff for like the holidays, for example, Christmas, you know, we'd have everyone buy on Christmas Eve and they're reheating on Christmas Day. So we just teach them to, you know, low and slow at home. Same thing. Put your oven at the lowest possible temperature. Reheat your meat all the way back up to a certain safe temperature of 165.
Okay.
And then enjoy it from there. So I'm always a big believer in low and slow. So a lot of people, when they make turkeys, they go like 450 degrees for, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 hours. Whereas if you do a lower temperature and you bring up that meat nice and slow, it keeps the moisture inside of it.
God, I love brisket. It's just so
I brought
good.
You brisket today.
Did you really?
I did. I brought you brisket. I brought you some barbecue sauce.
Oh, my God.
And I even brought you some of our red envelopes that we got.
We're going to talk about that in a second. You're giving away a motorcycle?
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Again,
isn't the food enough?
Again, we're a big believer of doing things different, you know?
Right.
There's not a lot of small restaurant owners giving away motorcycles.
This is what I love about you, too. You also give back to the community. I mean, you feel like you're a very blessed person. You talk about taking care of your staff. You give back to the community all the time, too.
Yeah, I mean, the community is what's making my dream come true. So without our guests coming into our restaurant, you know, I wouldn't be who I am. So we try to give back to every school, every organization. We do benefit nights every Monday night. So the community is really important to us, and it's actually one of our core values of our company.
Oh, man, I love it. Well, let's take a look at traffic, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk to Chris Schoenberger. You can go to WeGrillItAll.com. 720 WGN, 648, Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran all week. In studio with us, the head chef and owner of Barbecued Productions. You can find it at 34121 North US 45 in Third Lake, 847-543-1234, or go to WeGrillItAll.com. It's Chris Schoenberger. Getting some text messages, 708 area code. My wife likes her steak well done. I tell her she's missing the flavor. Why do people get their steak done well done? I don't get it.
I don't.
It's dry and disgusting.
Not a well done fan myself.
Yes.
Can't really answer that one.
I don't get that.
So, but there's people out there. My wife's the same thing. It's funny, my wife's a vegetarian. So,
what?
Yeah, she doesn't eat red meat.
You're a barbecue guy.
I know, it's so weird. but it's so funny because I told her when we had our first son, I was like, there's no way you're raising him.
No.
No way.
Yeah.
So I make sure every time I can, I get a red burger right in front of him.
You guys are giving away a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Why?
Again, we like to be different. So we started this promotion 3 years ago.
Okay.
It's been a huge success for us. It's called our Red Envelope Program. Started out as Red Envelope. Now it's white. But what it is there's one of 11 prizes inside here. So you come into our restaurant from now until the end of the year, and you get one of these envelopes. You can't open this envelope. There's a prize in here.
Okay.
You can't open this envelope until you come back and dine with us in January and February. Inside this envelope is one of the 11 prizes. So anywhere from $10 off to 50% off to 100% off. And then our grand prize this year is an iPad, a grill, a TV, and then the grand prize is a motorcycle. So Nielsen's Enterprise out of Lake Villa, they're really good friends of ours. They do a lot of stuff with us. And so Ted, who owns Nielsen's, decided to come in and help me out with it this year. And so we're giving away a brand new 2016 motorcycle. So in the month of January and February, one of these envelopes has that prize in it. Somebody's going to open it up at the end of their meal,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully they jump up and down and scream.
I feel like people, and I don't mean to say up there, but Third Lake, Gray's Lake, everybody's very close up there. Like Ray and Raymond Chevrolet, good guys up there.
Yep.
People are very close, and it's a tight-knit community.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we had a tornado that happened a year ago up in our community, and just missed our restaurant by like a mile. And when that tornado happened, we saw everything that come by and just all the communities come together. I mean, I saw towns come in and help us out that I've never even seen before. It was really cool.
That's great.
How's the barbecue nachos brisket, the homemade tortilla chip with a mixed cheese and a green pepper, an Alabama white barbecue sauce, huh?
When I created our nachos, I never in a million years thought that the nachos would be our signature appetizer. And if you look at the items that we sell, I mean, on a monthly basis, we sell about 3,000 orders of nachos. And then, like, our next closest one underneath that is, like, 600. So it's, like, nachos.
Jeez.
Like, we can't keep the nachos in stock. I mean, they literally just nonstop out the door. And the nachos is probably something that'll just – people order that, and then they're like, all right, I'm not eating anything else because it's that big. It literally comes on a plate, like, this big. And it's huge. It's enough to feed like 8 people.
In New Year's Eve parties, New Year's Day, you'll cater those.
Oh, we cater everything. Yeah, we're open now. The only day we close is Christmas Day, so we're open now until next Christmas Day.
You talk about how you got started with a wedding reception. I'll tell you, one of the greatest wedding receptions I went to was a pig roast.
Yeah.
There's so much fun.
Yeah, pig roast.
Get out of the hall. Get outside.
Yeah. When we started this, we started out doing like, you know, 4 or 5 pig roasts a year. People started getting the name out there and seeing the pigs roasting.
Uh-huh.
And now I think last year we did close to 450 pig roasts. And it's just incredible the amount of people who are – pig roast is starting to come back. Like, I feel that pig roast died for a little while. And now that there's so many different ways of cooking them.
So you guys like look at the pig and still want to eat? That's just –
it doesn't bother me. Yes. I'll eat anything.
So it's really funny. Yes. It's really funny on a weekend when we go and pick up
you
our
put
pigs.
Barbecue sauce on anything, I'll eat it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, I still want to see the thing that's hanging out, but that's good. You guys are tougher than I am.
The pig's head, you always, that's like a thing. Why is that? The pig's head with
I tell
the,
you what, we have some guys that work
is
on
it the apple in its mouth?
We actually don't do that.
Oh, you don't?
I mean, a lot of people do it. I've tried every way possible to get the apple in the mouth, and it's so seized up that you can't. I don't know how they do it, so we don't do it. We roast it in our smoker, nice and slow,
okay.
209 degrees, and we pull it to 191 degrees and just start pulling the pork.
I come from a big barbecue family, and I remember growing up, my father, in his mind, it's not done until it's burnt. He burned everything on the grill, and it was always charcoal, and he couldn't control the fire. It was just rough stuff.
No, the redder the better. the best way.
In Bears tailgates, my brother Ed, I mean, our biggest problem is the grill, getting the grill hot, because the grill's got to be hot to put the meat on it.
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest mistakes people do with grilling is that they put the meat on the grill before the coals on the charcoal grill get to the, you know, you got to really, when I do it, I make sure I soak the heck out of those briquettes,
mm-hmm.
and let it soak in there, and then you go ahead and light it and wait till they get like an ash gray. And then I'm a big fan of indirect heat, because when you get that direct heat is when you get the overcooked and you dry and you burn it up. So indirect heat, put it on one side and let that smoke roll and just start cooking your food in there.
You can never have enough lighter fluid.
No.
Right?
No.
Just keep spraying it on there.
Let it go on there. It'll burn out. It'll burn off, and then you just wait till those coals get that nice ash gray, and then once you do that, you put your meat right on there.
And let's talk about your barbecue sauce. You brought in some today?
I did. So I brought in our two most popular ones. It's our Chicago Sweet and Spicy, and it's our Maple Chipotle. The cool thing about our barbecue sauce is in our retail bottles, every bottle that we sell, whether it's in our restaurant or on our Facebook page or on our website, we donate a quarter back to only law enforcement. So we donate to the 100 Club of Chicago.
I'm
And we also do a lot of stuff up by us. So we do meals for different police departments. We did the Thanksgiving meals. We did some stuff with Jason McKee for the veterans. So every That's bottle right. that we sell, we take a quarter every single month. We write a check to a different type of organization in the Illinois law enforcement for fallen officers or anything we can do to help out.
Jason McKee's a great man. That's awesome that you're working with him. I like that you got the Cub hat too on your website.
Here. Absolutely, we're big sports nuts here. So, and we have you walk in, and the cool thing about our restaurant is we're a huge sports bar. So every seat when I designed the restaurant, every single seat you sit at, there's three TVs at each seat that you can see in different eyesight.
God, oh, the triple threat.
Yeah. So if you turn to your left, there's a TV. You
look I feel like you've done everything right since 2009. Losing your job. Were you married in 09 when you lost your job?
I was not.
Okay. That's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
Women freak out when you lose your job.
I got a great wife, and she's a huge supporter of me. She keeps the family going at home, which allows me to do what I do. But
right.
You know, the other cool thing about us is all of our recipes, all the things we do at our restaurant, 98% of them is changed or modified or upgraded by our guest feedback, and I do Yelp, TripAdvisor, Facebook. So all of our reviews, like we just changed our Brussels sprout recipe because I was getting like 3 or 4 Yelp reviews that saying, hey, the Brussels sprouts stink. So I was like, hey, send me a message and let me know what you think I can do to change it. So I was getting people saying, hey, try this. And so I was like, all right, cool. This is what the guests want. So then I started doing recipes and then I invite them back in. I was like, hey, now let
Damn,
me know.
That's
me know,
awesome.
That is anything. Great.
You know, because I learned when I started this restaurant, you know, I'm a big guy and I eat everywhere, but it doesn't matter what I like.
You know, I'm a big guy. I eat everywhere.
You know, you don't trust a skinny chef. So, you know, so I bring our guests back in and I let them try out the new recipes. And, you know, I've even invited guys in the back of the kitchen. Like they say, oh, you know, I don't think it's done right, or come in the kitchen with me. Let's go. Let's see if we can come with this together.
God, that's
and
so smart.
Invite the guests in the back. I mean, I give tours of my restaurant all the time because I love giving tours. I think it's one of the coolest things you can do.
Sure.
And so we have a super clean kitchen. You can eat off the floor, and I got great guys that keep it that way. And so we invite our fans back all the time and show them the smoker, show them the fire. It's awesome.
God, you have such a great attitude. And the way that you give back, you have good karma, man.
Thank you, man. I appreciate
good for
it.
You.
Appreciate it.
WeGrillItAll.com is Chris's website, Barbecued Productions. Thanks for coming in, man.
Oh, thank you, guys. Merry Christmas.
It's good to see you.
You too.
And Happy New Year.
You too.
It's 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran. Mark Carman's here. Dave Schwann is here. My mother is 83 years old and still working.
Wow.
I have 4 sisters in the workforce. I have a wife who is a working mother. Many of the women listening right now are working mothers, as is Mary Sandberg on the show, Mary Vandeveld, Wendy Snyder, Anna DeVellantis, many people at WGN. It's very hard even today to be a woman in the workforce. And joining us this morning to talk about just that from the website, TakeTheLeadWomen.com. It's Gloria Felt. Gloria, good morning.
Good morning, Pete. How are you?
You know, Gloria, still today, it's hard to be a woman in the workforce. I hear it from my wife, who is a manager. When a client finds out she's a woman, they ask for her male counterpart, and I can't believe the stories that she tells me.
It is amazing, isn't it? You would think that since women are almost half of the workforce now, and we have been for quite a while, that those kinds of biases would be gone, but unfortunately they're not. And that is exactly why, although women are half the workforce, they're still under 20% of the top leadership. So we have a long way to go.
Still today, you know, these stories that you have on your website, you just can't believe these things. And you have a great story about toxic employees in the workforce, which I absolutely love because we can all relate to it.
Yes, and toxic employees do come in various genders. It's that's not a male female thing necessarily,
right.
But I think that men are better equipped by socialization because of all the upbringing that men tend to have. They sort of don't take it as personally. And for women, we want people to be happy. We're socialized to think about how people are feeling. And so it's particularly hard for women in situations like that. And we need to learn skills, and that's one of the things that Take the Lead does. We do training, mentoring, role modeling, and thought leadership. And the training component really does help women a lot to know how to deal with those situations and how to change them.
Well, give me some takeaways for people that are listening right now. What kind of skills do they need when they deal with toxic employees?
We start by teaching women to understand power better. It's an interesting phenomenon. When I wrote my book, No Excuses, 9 Ways Women Can Change How We Think About Power, what I learned was that women have a different relationship with power than men do, generally speaking. And it's all socially learned. None of this is hardwired, but we have to live in the world as it is so that we can create the world we want to have. And so we start by literally reconfiguring in our own minds about how we think about power from that sort of well, oppressive power over to a more expansive power to. And then women learn to enjoy the how you can use power in a positive way.
Right.
And that just gives you a whole different attitude. And then we teach 9 leadership power tools, for example, learning how to actually embrace controversy instead of running away from it, how to use the conflict, how to deal with it, how to have the conversations that matter so that you can engage in those discussions, even in the workplace, in a way that's positive and helps you add value to your organization and move it forward.
My wife's been a manager for 15 years, and every single week she still has to prove herself. Every week, there's always someone that challenges her to prove herself. It's crazy.
Isn't that interesting? Because now what we know, there's unassailable evidence. There's a business case that we never had before. I mean, you and I might just want to say it's the right thing to do to have more women in leadership and treat them, women fairly. But when you have more women in upper leadership in a company, it makes more money. So there's a business case now that never existed before. And I think that's going to change a lot. But we women have to know our value. We women have to ourselves know what we bring to the table and not let anybody push us back because we're women.
Why do you think that is, Gloria, that companies make more money when women are in charge? Does that mean that the company's maybe more in touch with what's going on in the world?
Apparently. Well, first of all, women buy 85% of the consumer goods and products. So if a company doesn't have a pretty much good gender balance, they may fall out of line with the marketplace. I mean, they just may not understand what the marketplace is. But some really interesting studies that have come out of Harvard Business School found that when you add women to a group that has previously been all male, it literally raises the group intelligence. And again, it's not that women are better or smarter. I think it is that women are more socialized to be empathetic and to think about what other people are feeling so they can read things going on in the room that may not be self-evident.
Sure.
No, they are. They're better and smarter. I think that's fair to say.
Well, I don't know. I really hesitate to say that because as we started off the conversation, you know, I mean, yeah, men and women both can have all kinds of different qualities, and you can't make a blanket statement. But what we have found is that women are really good at collaborating. They're good at getting things done, just flat out getting things done. You know, they're not in it so much for the power trip. It's for the, like, well, let's just get the stuff done. It's like the women in Congress who got a budget passed when the men had been arguing about it for the whole year.
Well, I look at our radio station here, and I think that women in management, they paint more of a picture. Like, I'm going to use an example, Mark, and back me up here, Jackie Paulus.
Yeah.
Jackie she paints a picture. She explains it better than a lot of guys.
Interesting.
She's just wonderful. She really is.
So you have some concrete examples.
Absolutely.
Of exactly what we're talking about. Yeah, it's interesting. And the thing is that in the industrial society, when it was more about brawn than brains, it was, you know, you had a different set of needs, a different set of functional needs for companies. Now we live in an information and technology economy. And since women have been earning 57% of the college degrees for several decades now, any organization that wants to fill its pipeline with highly educated, highly skilled workers had better be reaching out to women. And in order to keep women, they need to create a culture where women feel comfortable and where women do feel valued.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about Gloria Felt from TakeTheLeadWomen.com. You know, you talk about working mothers. You always hear about working mothers. But I was brought up, I had 4 sisters. My mother, she worked at a church growing up. So she kind of had a job, even though it was a volunteer job. And I have 11 siblings. So she took care of 12 children.
Whoa.
So I saw my mother working and trying to do housework. So I grew up doing laundry and trying to make dinner. So now, as a working father, I'm picking up my son from school. I do all the laundry in the house. I don't want my wife to even touch it.
Wow.
And I do most of the cooking. I'd say probably 80, 85% of the cooking.
You know, that's a great story. And your mother was definitely a working mother. Oh, my goodness. 11 children. Wow. That's quite a houseful. And most households are smaller these days for a lot of different reasons.
Yes.
But still, the housework still has to be done. You know, the toilets have to be cleaned.
Yep.
The laundry has to be done. Dinner has to be cooked. And it's really great because I think there is a whole generation of men like you who have been raised by women like your mother and like me.
Right.
And we've taught you, and that's as it should be. And you know what's really great about that to me, and I see this in my own son particularly, that men are so much more a part of their children's lives now.
Yes. Well, that's the way it should be.
Best things. That's one of the, you know,
right.
It's great for the kids and it's great for everyone.
I don't know about anyone else, but my mother used to send us away to my grandmother's house for 4 days. We'd call it bathroom boot camp, where grandma would show us how to clean a bathroom properly, clean windows, clean houses. So it was my grandmother's boot camp where we learned to clean. In fourth grade, that was the path to fifth grade. Fourth grade summer, you had to go to grandma's house.
That is a wonderful thing. You know, now that I'm a grandmother, I will have to confess my grandchildren would never have learned that from me because those were not my skills. Those were not my skills. But I think that, you know, when there is more gender balance in the workplace, some other policies start to change. There tends to be more opportunity for flex time, more understanding that somebody needs to go pick up the kids from school, whether it's the woman or the man, and somebody needs to be taking care of those of the kids if they need to go to the doctor. And so I think there's just a more humane kind of an approach to people in the workplace, and that's a very positive change. Now, the work has to get done, and what we do know is that taking care of those family taking care of those family obligations in no way hinders the productivity of getting the work done. And there are plenty of studies now that show that companies that do make accommodations for people so that they can have a life as well as make a living actually have greater employee loyalty, less turnover, and that means they spend less money on retraining people. So there's data now. I mean, it's a good thing to do, but it also makes good business sense now. And I just think that's data we never had before, and we need to be saying it loud and clear over and over and over again.
You got a lot of data, Gloria, and you said 57% of people graduating from college are women. I mean,
that would be true. That is true.
That's that's shocking to me that wouldn't be like, I could see 51-49, 52-48. Why do you think it's that big of a number?
Again, I think it has a lot to do with socialization. If you look at how little girls are socialized from the very beginning, they learn to be quiet, be still, pay attention. They like to read. They develop their literacy skills earlier than boys do, and so they just become better students. Now, here's an interesting thing too, and that is sometimes being a good student and knowing how to sit still and be quiet and pay attention to what's going on in the classroom and do your work may not always get you ahead in your job. Because the more aggressive and assertive skills that boys learn growing up are important too, but we do need to have more gender balance in who's getting the higher level degrees, the higher level of education. Because again, this is an economy that's based on brains, not brawn anymore, and it's really important to have a workforce, male and female, that is well educated.
Gloria, what about the gender wage gap? In all 50 states, we've seen a little progress in the last year or so. When will we see that wage gap close?
We'll see the wage gap close when women, number one, value themselves, understand what their value is, and number two, when they learn to ask and negotiate more effectively. And those are two key things that we work on at Take the Lead when we're doing our training and mentoring and role modeling for women, because if you don't realize your value, how do you know to even ask for it? I myself never negotiated for compensation until I actually had a job in New York and found out how much it cost to live here. But and I had to renegotiate something I had already negotiated.
Right.
But you, if you don't value yourself, if you don't know your own value, I'll give you an example. I was recently talking with a company called ZipRecruiter, and they host hundreds of thousands of job openings and hundreds of thousands of job applications, and you know, so that people can find matches for themselves. And I spoke with their CEO, who told me that they had done a lot of number crunching, and they found that women, on average, job matching job for job, said that their salary needs were $11,000 less than the men said theirs were.
Wow.
So you got to know your own value. You got to value your own self first.
Yep.
And there are lots of websites now where you can find out what comparable jobs pay. And so women out there, you research that before you even go in, and you go in with a request that's higher than you think you're worth, and then maybe you'll get paid what you are worth.
What's the old saying? You don't ask, you don't get.
Yeah, that's, you know, my father always said that.
Yep.
He always said, and you know what was great about my father? He would use the female pronoun when talking with me. He always said, "She who asks gets."
I like that. That's good. Gloria, pleasure to talk to you. Happy New Year. TakeTheLeadWomen.com. There's some great articles on there for men and women if you guys want to check it out.
Fantastic. Thanks, Pete. Great talking to you.
Thank you, Gloria.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Thanks again to Gloria Felt. TakeTheLeadWomen.com. Great articles on there just about the workforce for men and women. And, you know, we touched on working mothers, working fathers. I'm telling you, I'm a working father, and I do everything. I do.
I believe you.
I do all the laundry in the house. All of it.
Do you like doing it?
I just don't want... When we first got married 15 years ago, for some reason, my wife decided to do the laundry, and I don't dry my T-shirts. I hang my T-shirts, okay?
Oh, boy. You are
She dried everything.
So
and I'm like, that's it. Never again. No reason.
You had to step in.
I did.
Oh, so hold on a second. How many T-shirts will you wash at a time? You got like 10 things hanging up there in the bathroom? What is
it? I'm talking about summer T-shirts that you wear with shorts or jeans, not the workout T-shirts.
Do you iron your T-shirts? I think you do.
I do not, but I did work at a dry cleaner's when I went to Bradley, and I noticed wrinkled clothes, so I'm a great ironer. I can iron anything.
You worked at a dry cleaner's in college?
Yes.
No one has ever done that. You realize that?
For 5 years in college, yes.
For 5 years?
Yes. So I noticed clothes on everyone. I noticed tailoring. I noticed clothes, how they hang, if they're clean, wrinkled, you name it. I noticed.
So the word meticulous does apply to you.
Well, that's why he asked me to leave the studio when I came in just to say hello.
Schwann comes down at 5:40. Hey, I just wanted to say hi. Dave, your shirt's wrinkled. Get out of here.
He was right.
Get out.
And it is. I admit it.
Yes. How old were you guys when you started doing laundry?
I was in college. I was 18.
18?
Yeah.
Okay.
I definitely learned before that. I'd say I knew how to use the laundry equipment at, I don't
know,
12?
No.
That young?
Sure. I mean, I knew where it was. I think I knew how things worked. I was terrible at actually folding and doing anything of the sort.
Folding's the worst and putting it away.
Right.
Hated it. But fifth grade for me.
Is that right?
Because
wow.
You couldn't get anything clean with all these kids. So if you wanted something clean,
you
you'd have to
do it
yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you iron also?
No, I didn't start ironing until college when I worked at the dry cleaners.
I mean, you were legit battling for space, though, I would imagine.
Yeah, it was rough stuff, man. You're right.
I mean, yeah.
And you had to guard your clothes, too, because you have brothers around your age. They want to steal your clothes.
Right, so but if you're keeping everything clean, if I was your brother, I would have stolen your socks.
That's Johnny.
Yeah.
My brother Johnny. To this day, when I see him, I want to punch him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I went to camp, good old Camp Nabagamon, the kids that kept their stuff in order, yeah, those socks, those became mine. That happened. I confess.
You're the bully guy.
I wasn't a bully. I just kind of snuck around. I'm like, those look clean, great.
How about cooking? When did you learn to cook?
I could do a pancake at an early age.
I don't know if a pancake is cooking.
Well, it hasn't advanced much past that. We've added in a mac and cheese. Homemade, though, Pete.
Schwann, how about you? Are you a cook?
No. I try. I try.
You guys are the worst. Really?
I bought a couple chicken breasts and some salmon the other day, and that was a big move. Now, it's still sitting in the fridge. It hasn't been cooked. They're probably going to spoil, and I won't get it done.
Do you go to the Jewel and buy the Cornichon and keep it in your fridge
no.
and heat it up?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. With Doritos.
Yes. That's my visual.
Yeah.
That's true.
Little Cornichon and little Doritos, and then there's some Haagen-Dazs, and that's dinner. Done.
Coming up, we're going to talk to Hamp. He's probably all wound up. I sent him a text over the weekend. I'm like, it's okay, man. The season's over. Let's talk Christmas.
Those guys love you and hate me, just so you know.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, I sit with them on Sundays. And like,
yeah.
You know, Pete used to bring in this. Pete used to do that. Pete,
No. Here's the deal. When you work with them, they hate you. When you leave, they love you.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Well, right now they love you.
Oh, and God.
Yes, it's full love. Just know that you're being mentioned every week. Pete did this. Pete did that. Listen, I know that Pete's better than me.
I didn't do anything.
Well, they claim that you did, then. You should take some credit.
Okay, I will.
I mean,
I never work with OB. I work with Kaz and Ham.
Right.
And, well, and Kaz is just, Kaz likes to be a tough guy.
Kaz is a beauty. They're all beauties. right?
Yes, they are. So you were on Saturday?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we did. Saturday was rough. That was probably their worst game of the year. And that's saying something because, you know, you're talking about losing to Jacksonville at home,
yep.
giving up 17 in the fourth quarter. But Saturday was awful.
I feel like I wouldn't have given up five picks on Saturday if I were a quarterback.
Matt Barkley had a rough, rough, rough day.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that bandwagon was building. And it just that was a massive crash on the Edens.
So we got to ease into Hamp. One game left. We got to ease into the segment with Hamp. That's coming up.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
He's the worst quarterback that has played in the NFL the last 5 years.
Period.
Loser. And that's embarrassing. We look like losers.
And they weren't ready. Weren't ready.
He went from all Sean to some Sean to no Sean in about a month here. If you're not going to help us, get out of the damn way.
Period.
It's almost like he's paralyzed by indecision.
And folks, I got a better word for it, Danny. How about, could it be possible this kid takes scared the death pill?
Dan Hampton is always driven by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Let's bring the Hall of Famer number 99 on the show. Hamp, Merry Christmas. How was it yesterday?
Merry Christmas to you, Mr. Pete, and all the listeners. How was it yesterday? Well, it was 2 days ago. Christmas was great, but I was thankful that... We just had to get that bear squirmish out of the way before everyone wanted to have a breakdown around the Christmas tree.
You know, Carmen's here, and we were comparing notes because you and I worked together for a year, and now he's hosting the post-game show with the Bears. And I forgot to ask you, now, when you're watching the game, Mark, with Hamp, is he still get up and throw stuff at the TV and scream and cuss like you've never heard before?
I think, Hampo, you can confirm this, but early in the year you were there, and now you're kind of just sort of resigned to the fate of the club. Is that about right?
And that in itself is really distressing to me because, obviously, we care desperately about not only the team doing well, but being, something we can respect and admire. And at some point during the course of the season, it started going down the drain. And now apathy has almost kicked in. But I've got to tell you, at the beginning of the game last week, the great legend himself, Ed Obradovich, they did a pan of the stadium. And Tom, you weren't there yet. It was just Lil Dan, me, and Kaz. And OB had the look of someone that's seen a ghost.
Yeah.
And he said, I've been going to Bear games since I was a little kid. I played for them. I watched them now. You know, I've been doing this a long time. He goes, I've never seen a stadium that empty at kickoff. And all that being said, it's not just us. You know, and of course we love being there for the fans on WGN. You know, watching the team. You know, prodding them and critiquing them. But now the everyday fan is saying, "I got better stuff to do. I don't care."
Yeah.
And you know what? That's the sad part, and that's what George McCaskey needs to understand. John Fox has allowed a malaise of indifference to the greatest fan base of any sport, of any team in the United States. And that in itself, like I said, you know, okay, how many times can I throw something, you know, in disgust before you say, okay, we're doing the same thing every week. What about this shot?
I mean, I walked in on Sunday because, you know, I do other work before I come in. And, I mean, you guys were talking politics. That was what was going on. Like, it was, they were so bad.
There was nothing to talk about.
On Saturday, they were so bad. It was such a miserable performance that you might as well talk about something else. And I mean, you're as diehard as there is, right?
And we all, you know, over the last month, you know, Matt Barkley has shown flashes that has piqued our interest. And we say, hey, could he possibly? Well, you know, could we have found? Well, it, you know, he is, you know, basically brought it into a 5-interception day that, you know, he looks like Chase Jr. on the field. And then Jordan Howard, who we've all grown to, you know, to admire and love watching his running style this year. But we've got an offensive coordinator that refuses to build the offense around his success. And it's all just a bucket of futility. And yes, there's a point where you hit like this point of no return where you say, I'm sick of it. I am sick of it. And,
right.
You know, and bless the whatever 40,000 Bear fans that did venture out on Christmas Eve, because it would, you know, hey, it's embarrassing enough. It was a topic in the locker room, not only for the Bears, but for the Washington Redskins. And by the way, the Washington Redskins were roadkill Monday night by Chico and the Carolina Panthers.
Yep.
They scrape themselves up. They have a short week of practice. They come on a Saturday. They have to travel Friday. They only have one day. And they come in and they slap us around like we're some kind of, Christmas doll. And we don't put up any fight. Zero. And then after the game, in the post-locker game interviews, everyone saying, oh, well, I've got to do this and I got to do that. Well, nobody does anything. And that is, again, the malaise that has kind of matriculated down through the organization, where everybody kind of gets the same old, oh, we tried hard, and that's good enough. Well, it's not good enough.
We're talking with Hall of Famer number 99, Dan Hampton. Back to the fans for a second, because I give money to the Bears. I'm a season ticket holder, and you're right. We didn't want to go to the game. We have a community of people. My brother Ed has season tickets. I have season tickets. I share them with my brother Dave, my buddy Bob Lanigan. We all get together and tailgate, and that in itself is so much fun. But this season, we didn't do it because no one wanted to go to the games after the Bears were losing, and we could not even give away the tickets for Christmas Eve. No one wanted them. Free tickets. No one wanted our tickets.
Well, my lovely bride told me she was, and again, she's, I don't want to say indifferent about football, but she's not a huge fan and all that, and whatever happens, happens, and it doesn't affect her life like it does, obviously, OB and Kaz and I, we went driving to a bridge on the way. But she told me last week, she goes, I've got a lot of friends that are basically passing on free Green Bay Packer tickets. Okay, it was 8 degrees, 10 degrees, whatever. Yep. But still, I, in my lifetime, cannot remember anyone passing on free Green Bay Packer tickets.
Right.
And you know what? And as you said, your downward spiral up, you know, the drain of a season that this has been, we weren't playing against the New England Patriots, the Denver Broncos. This was the second easiest schedule of any team in pro football. And so for this debacle, and trust me, we are now, I think, installed as an underdog on the road against Minnesota. So if we lose in Minnesota, and, you know, who's to say That would be a 3-win season. It has not occurred for the Chicago Bears since 1972. Now, how many of the listeners do we have that even remember or were even born in 1972 to remember?
Was that Neil Armstrong in 72?
No, that would be Armstrong. His first year was 78.
78?
This was and Neil Armstrong was 1978, 1980, and 81.
Okay.
What was the defensive coordinator's name? And I remember listening to Doug Buffon and Butkus and O'Pradovich.
Abe Gibron was the coach in 73.
Abe Gibron.
And they telling stories about how pathetic it was, and it was a joke, and they knew they were a mockery. And for us to basically fall back into that type of a position in the NFL, like I said, guys, look, these coaches, John Fox and the rest of this group, they're just passing through. Ed Obradovich calls me, we're Bears for life. It hurts us to the bone. And nobody's, you know, shouting from the rafters saying, this cannot continue. We've got to stop it.
Yeah.
It's almost like we're going to drive this thing into the offseason. And everybody's going to run for cover and start it up again in August.
Right.
That's
exactly what they're going to do. Hamp, hold on a second. We're going to check traffic, and we'll talk some more to Dan Hamp. 720 WGN, Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran. Dan Hampton is always driven by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. On the phone with us, Hall of Famer number 99, Dan Hampton. Dan, what did little Dan get for Christmas? A few weeks ago, you brought up the fact he may get coal. He's had a bad year. Please tell me he got some gifts.
Well, and again, he's really been quite good this year. There's been a couple of issues with the grades, but like all little kids, hey, it's a great time of year, and you want to get him something nice. But he's been pretty industrious. I was telling Cochran, 2-3 weeks ago when the snow was coming, he's got a four-wheeler and a snowplow on it, and
yep.
he's got his own little enterprise.
Yep.
And so he needed new gloves, he needed some boots, and a big coat. Get this, they got coats that have batteries in it, and it's like electronic coat that keeps you warm. Imagine that.
That's anyway. Cheating to me. That's cheating.
He's also Hamp. He's
the same thing. Suck it up.
Suck it up. Yes.
He's also the light technician on the show, Hamp. Right? I mean, the guy, little Dan's been doing lighting up OB.
And OB wants to know why all the lights aren't focusing on him, and we're just basking in the reflective glory. But he got a. You got one of those drones, and hey, it's a great time of year. It's great to see the joy on the face. That was great.
And just to let you know, little Dan isn't little. How big is your son now? Because in fifth grade, he was as big as me. So that was three years ago.
I don't know. He's getting bigger. Almost 6'2", 210, something like that. He's an eighth grader, but he'll probably, obviously go out for football next fall, but he's kind of in a growth spurt, and he's doing well. And like I said, a lot of the listeners are saying, wait a minute, you bought your kid clothes and you think that's a present? He's growing out of everything pretty fast, so he's glad to get new stuff when he gets it.
Ham, before you go, are you drafting for need, or are you taking the best player available as we think about the Bears' future?
Well, the best player available is when you have a team that's somewhat prepared to make a run. We're not making a run, obviously. So you draft for need, and OB made a heartfelt plea about, even though Ryan Pace, and I like Ryan Pace and a lot of the stuff that he has, Akeem Hicks is a good thing. Those inside linebackers, Danny Trevathan and McPhee and a lot of these are good players and pieces you can build around. But if we would have kept Matt Slauson, then Cody Whitehair would not have been a necessity, and we could have drafted a tight end. And Leonard Floyd may be a difference maker. He might be. But right now I see a kid that makes a lot of mistakes. He'll make five or six bad plays before the one good one, and now he's in his second concussion protocol. So, and instead of that, why wouldn't we have wanted to try to find a great safety or a speed receiver?
Yep.
And Kevin White, another, you know, here's a guy
bust.
That, hey, bust is the word you got to use.
Yeah.
Oh, well, he's been hurt. Well, guess what, folks? If you are not capable of being healthy enough to contribute, you're a bust. That's the only way you can cut it. So I'm saying tight end. I watched the playoff games yet. Oh, no, they're almost like playoff games. Pittsburgh and Baltimore. Baltimore had no offense if it wasn't for their tight end. The Kansas City Chiefs, Kelce, he had over 100 yards and a touchdown at halftime. They are basically the venue that a lot of smart offenses are utilizing today, and we've got a bunch of nobodies. And even Zach's a good player, but Zach can't stay healthy as well. So
yep.
there's a lot of positions of need, but those are just a couple.
Who do you root for? Hamp, we'll talk to you on Friday. I'm in all week, okay?
Well, listen, have a great week, and let's enjoy our run-up to 2017 and hope the folks in the tower realize, hey, this plane's going the wrong direction. They got to make a change.
Thank you, Hamp. Talk to you Friday.
Merry Christmas.
All right. Dan Hampton, always driven by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. We were talking about the Bears. Now, Al, you were at the game on Saturday?
Yes. Good morning, Pete. How are you?
Good morning.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, I just I took my son. My brother's a season ticket holder, and he tickets. And, you know, I really enjoyed the game experience. But before the game, they gave away thank you towels. And ironically, they were white. So was it management who was trying to say something? You know, we wave the white towel, we're surrendering.
So they gave away white towels at the game, and they were raising the white flag, basically. Is that what you're saying, Al?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
And now here's another thing I was thinking while on hold. Maybe it's time for the McCaskies to say, you know what, we've given it our best shot, but really bring in an owner who's serious about bringing a winner back to Chicago.
I feel like we have this conversation every single year, and they'll never get rid of the team. That's their bread and butter right there. They're never going to get rid of the team.
A lot of people think when Virginia goes, that might...
What else are they going to do?
Take the money and live dreams?
I don't know. I don't see him getting rid of the team anytime soon. Thank you, Al, for the phone call.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran. Mark Carman's here. Dave Schwann is here. My mother is 83 years old and still working.
Wow.
I have four sisters in the workforce. I have a wife who is a working mother. Many of the women listening right now are working mothers, as is Mary Sandberg on the show, Mary Vandeveld, Wendy Snyder, Anna DeVellantis, many people at WGN. It's very hard even today to be a woman in the workforce. And joining us this morning to talk about just that from the website, TakeTheLeadWomen.com, it's Gloria Felt. Gloria, good morning.
Good morning, Pete. How are you?
You know, Gloria, still today, it's hard to be a woman in the workforce. I hear it from my wife, who is a manager. When a client finds out she's a woman, they ask for her male counterpart, and I can't believe the stories that she tells me.
It is amazing, isn't it? You would think that since women are almost half of the workforce now, and we have been for quite a while, that those kinds of biases would be gone, but unfortunately, they're not, and that is exactly why... Although women are half the workforce, they're still under 20% of the top leadership. So we have a long way to go.
Still today, you know, these stories that you have on your website, you just can't believe these things. And you have a great story about toxic employees in the workforce, which I absolutely love because we can all relate to it.
Yes, and toxic employees do come in various genders. It's that's not a male female thing necessarily.
Right.
But I think that men are better equipped by socialization because of all the upbringing that men tend to have. They sort of don't take it as personally. And for women, we want people to be happy. We're socialized to think about how people are feeling. And so it's particularly hard for women in situations like that. And we need to learn skills, and that's one of the things that Take the Lead does. We do training, mentoring, role modeling, and thought leadership. And the training component really does help women a lot to know how to deal with those situations and how to change them.
Well, give me some takeaways for people that are listening right now. What kind of skills do they need when they deal with toxic employees?
We start by teaching women to understand power better. It's an interesting phenomenon. When I wrote my book, No Excuses, 9 Ways Women Can Change How We Think About Power, what I learned was that women have a different relationship with power than men do, generally speaking. And it's all socially learned. None of this is hardwired, but we have to live in the world as it is so that we can create the world we want to have. And so we start by literally reconfiguring in our own minds about how we think about power from that sort of oppressive power over to a more expansive power to. And then women learn to enjoy the how you can use power in a positive way.
Right.
And that just gives you a whole different attitude. And then we teach 9 leadership power tools, for example, learning how to actually embrace controversy instead of running away from it, how to use the conflict, how to deal with it, how to have the conversations that matter so that you can engage in those discussions, even in the workplace, in a way that's positive and helps you add value to your organization and move it forward.
My wife's been a manager for 15 years, and every single week she still has to prove herself. Every week, there's always someone that challenges her to prove herself. It's crazy.
Isn't that interesting? Because now what we know, there's unassailable evidence. There's a business case that we never had before. I mean, you and I might just want to say it's the right thing to do to have more women in leadership and treat them, women fairly. But when you have more women in upper leadership in a company, it makes more money. So there's a business case now that never existed before. And I think that's going to change a lot. But we women have to know our value. We women have to ourselves know what we bring to the table and not let anybody push us back because we're women.
Why do you think that is, Gloria, that companies make more money when women are in charge? Does that mean that the company's maybe more in touch with what's going on in the world?
Apparently. Well, first of all, women buy 85% of the consumer goods and products. So if a company doesn't have a pretty much good gender balance, they may fall out of line with the marketplace. I mean, they just may not understand what the marketplace is. But some really interesting studies that have come out of Harvard Business School found that when you add women to a group that has previously been all male, it literally raises the group intelligence. And again, it's not that women are better or smarter. I think it is that women are more socialized to be empathetic and to think about what other people are feeling so they can read things going on in the room that may not be self-evident.
Sure.
No, they are. They're better and smarter. I think that's fair to say.
Well, I don't know. I hesitate to say that because as we started off the conversation, men and women both can have all kinds of different qualities, and you can't make a blanket statement. But what we have found is that women are really good at collaborating. They're good at getting things done, just flat out getting things done. You know, they're not in it so much for the power trip. It's for the, like, well, let's just get the stuff done. It's like the women in Congress who got a budget passed when the men had been arguing about it for the whole year.
Well, I look at our radio station here, and I think that women in management, they paint more of a picture. Like, I'm going to use an example, Mark, and back me up here, Jackie Paulus.
Yeah.
Jackie is, she paints a picture. She explains it better than a lot of guys.
Interesting.
She's just wonderful. She really is.
So you have some concrete examples.
Absolutely.
Of exactly what we're talking about. Yeah, it's interesting. And the thing is that in the industrial society, when it was more about brawn than brains, it was, you had a different set of needs, a different set of functional needs for companies. Now we live in an information and technology economy. And since women have been earning 57% of the college degrees for several decades now, any organization that wants to fill its pipeline with highly educated, highly skilled workers had better be reaching out to women. And in order to keep women, they need to create a culture where women feel comfortable and where women do feel valued.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Gloria Felt from TakeTheLeadWomen.com. You know, you talk about working mothers. You always hear about working mothers. But I was brought up, I had four sisters. My mother, she worked at a church growing up. So she kind of had a job, even though it was a volunteer job. And I have 11 siblings. So she took care of 12 children.
Whoa.
So I saw my mother working and trying to do housework. So I grew up doing laundry and trying to make dinner. So now, as a working father, I'm picking up my son from school. I do all the laundry in the house. I don't want my wife to even touch it.
Wow.
And I do most of the cooking. I'd say probably 80, 85% of the cooking.
You know, that's a great story. And your mother was definitely a working mother. Oh, my goodness. 11 children. Wow. That's quite a houseful. And most households are smaller these days for a lot of different reasons.
Yes.
But still, the housework still has to be done. You know, the toilets have to be cleaned.
Yep.
The laundry has to be done. Dinner has to be cooked. And it's really great because I think there is a whole generation of men like you who have been raised by women like your mother and like me.
Right.
And we've taught you, and that's as it should be. And you know what's really great about that to me, and I see this in my own son particularly, that men are so much more a part of their children's lives now.
Yes. Well, that's the way it should be.
Best things. That's one of the, you know, it's
right.
Great for the kids and it's great for everyone.
I don't know about anyone else, but my mother used to send us away to my grandmother's house for 4 days. We'd call it bathroom boot camp, where grandma would show us how to clean a bathroom properly, clean windows, clean houses. So it was my grandmother's boot camp where we learned to clean. In fourth grade, that was the path to fifth grade. Fourth grade summer, you had to go to grandma's house.
That is a wonderful thing. You know, now that I'm a grandmother, I will have to confess my grandchildren would never have learned that from me because those were not my skills. Those mm-hmm. were not my skills. But I think that, you know, when there is more gender balance in the workplace, some other policies start to change. There tends to be more opportunity for flex time, mm-hmm. more understanding that somebody needs to go pick up the kids from school, whether it's the woman or the man, and somebody needs to be taking care of those of the kids if they need to go to the doctor. And so I think there's just a more humane kind of an approach to people in the workplace, and that's a very positive change. Now, the work has to get done, and what we do know is that taking care of those family taking care of those family obligations in no way hinders the productivity of getting the work done. And there are plenty of studies now that show that companies that do make accommodations for people so that they can have a life as well as make a living actually have greater employee loyalty, mm-hmm. less turnover, and that means they spend less money on retraining people. So there's data now. I mean, it's a good thing to do, but it also makes good business sense now. And I just think that's data we never had before, and we need to be saying it loud and clear over and over and over again.
You got a lot of data, Gloria, and you said 57% of people graduating from college are women. I mean,
that would be true. That is true.
That's mm-hmm. that's shocking to me that wouldn't be like, I could see 51-49, 52-48. Why do you think it's that big of a number?
Again, I think it has a lot to do with socialization. If you look at how little girls are socialized from the very beginning, they learn to be quiet, be still, pay attention. They like to read. They develop their literacy skills earlier than boys do, and so they just become better students. Now, here's an interesting thing too, and that is sometimes being a good student and knowing how to sit still and be quiet and pay attention to what's going on in the classroom and do your work may not always get you ahead in your job. Because the more aggressive and assertive skills that boys learn growing up are important too. But we do need to we do need to have more gender balance in who's getting the higher level degrees, the higher level of education, because again, this is an economy that's based on brains, not brawn anymore, and it's really important to have a workforce, male and female, that is well educated.
Gloria, what about the gender wage gap in all 50 states? We've seen a little progress in the last year or so. When will we see that wage gap close?
We'll see the wage gap close when women, number one, value themselves, understand what their value is, and number two, when they learn to ask and negotiate more effectively. And those are two key things that we work on at Take the Lead when we're doing our training and mentoring and role modeling for women. Because if you don't realize your value, how do you know to even ask for it? I myself never negotiated for compensation until I actually had a job in New York and found out how much it cost to live here. And I had to renegotiate something I had already negotiated.
Right.
But if you don't value yourself, if you don't know your own value, I'll give you an example. I was recently talking with a company called ZipRecruiter, and they host hundreds of thousands of job openings and hundreds of thousands of job applications, and you know, so that people can find matches for themselves. And I spoke with their CEO, who told me that they had done a lot of number crunching, and they found that women, on average, job matching job for job, said that their salary needs were $11,000 less than the men said theirs were.
Wow.
So you got to know your own value. You got to value your own self first.
Yep.
And there are lots of websites now where you can find out what comparable jobs pay. And so women out there, you research that before you even go in, and you go in with a request that's higher than you think you're worth, and then maybe you'll get paid what you are worth.
What's the old saying? You don't ask, you don't get?
Yeah, that's, you know, my father always said that to
yep.
me. Always said, and you know what was great about my father? He would use the female pronoun when talking with me. He always said, "She who asks, gets."
I like that. That's good. Gloria, pleasure to talk to you. Happy New Year. TakeTheLeadWomen.com. There's some great articles on there for men and women if you guys want to check it out.
Fantastic. Thanks, Pete. Great talking to you.
Thank you, Gloria.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Thanks again to Gloria Felt, TakeTheLeadWomen.com. Great articles on there just about the workforce for men and women. And, you know, we touched on working mothers, working fathers. I'm telling you, I'm a working father, and I do everything. I do.
I believe you.
I do all the laundry in the house. All of it.
Do you like doing it?
I just don't want... When we first got married 15 years ago, for some reason, my wife decided to do the laundry, and I don't dry my T-shirts. I hang my T-shirts, okay?
Oh, boy. You are
She dried everything.
So
and I'm like, that's it. Never again. No reason.
You had to step in.
I did.
Oh, so hold on a second. How many T-shirts will you wash at a time? You got like 10 things hanging up there in the bathroom? What is
it? I'm talking about summer T-shirts that you wear with shorts or jeans, not the workout T-shirts.
Do you iron your T-shirts? I think you do.
I do not, but I did work at a dry cleaner's when I went to Bradley, and I noticed wrinkled clothes, so I'm a great ironer. I can iron anything.
You worked at a dry cleaner's in college?
Yes.
No one has ever done that. You realize that?
For 5 years in college, yes.
For 5 years?
Yes. So I noticed clothes on everyone. I noticed tailoring. I noticed clothes, how they hang, if they're clean, wrinkled, you name it. I noticed.
So the word meticulous does apply to you.
Well, that's why he asked me to leave the studio when I came in just to say hello.
Schwann comes down at 5:40. Hey, I just wanted to say hi. Dave, your shirt's wrinkled. Get out of here.
He was right.
Get out.
And it is. I admit it.
Yes. How old were you guys when you started doing laundry?
I was in college. I was 18.
18?
Yeah.
Okay.
I definitely learned before that. I'd say I knew how to use the laundry equipment at, I don't
know,
12?
No.
That young?
Sure. I mean, I knew where it was. I think I knew how things worked. I was terrible at actually folding and doing anything of the sort.
Folding's the worst and putting it away.
Right.
Hated it. But fifth grade for me.
Is that right?
Because
wow.
You couldn't get anything clean with all these kids. So if you wanted something clean,
yeah,
you'd have
to
do it
yourself. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you iron also?
No, I didn't start ironing until college when I worked at the dry cleaners.
I mean, you were legit battling for space, though, I would imagine.
Yeah, it was rough stuff, man. You're right.
I mean,
yeah. And you had to guard your clothes, too, because you have brothers around your age. They want to steal your clothes.
Right, so but if you're keeping everything clean, if I was your brother, I would have stolen your socks.
That's Johnny.
Yeah.
My brother Johnny. To this day, when I see him, I want to punch him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I went to camp, good old Camp Nabagamon, the kids that kept their stuff in order, yeah, those socks, those became mine. That happened. I confess.
You're the bully guy.
I wasn't a bully. I just kind of snuck around. I'm like, those look clean, great.
How about cooking? When did you learn to cook?
I could do a pancake at an early age.
I don't know if a pancake is cooking.
Well, it hasn't advanced much past that. We've added in a mac and cheese. Homemade, though, Pete.
Schwan, how about you? Are you a cook?
No. I try. I try. I try.
You guys are the worst. Really?
I bought a couple chicken breasts and some salmon the other day, and that was a big move. Now, it's still sitting in the fridge. Hasn't been cooked. They're probably going to spoil, and I won't get it done.
Do you go to the Jewel and buy the Cornichon and keep it in your fridge
no.
and heat it up?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. With Doritos.
Yes. That's my visual.
Yeah.
That's true.
Little Cornichon and little Doritos, and then there's some Haagen-Dazs, and that's dinner. Done.
Coming up, we're going to talk to Hamp. He's probably all wound up. I sent him a text over the weekend. I'm like, it's okay, man. The season's over. Let's talk Christmas.
Those guys love you and hate me, just so you know.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, I sit with them on Sundays. I'm
oh,
like,
yeah.
You know, Pete used to bring in this. Pete used to do that. Pete,
No. Here's the deal. When you work with them, they hate you. When you leave, they love you.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Well, right now they love you.
Oh, and God.
Yes, it's full love. Just know that you're being mentioned every week. Pete did this. Pete did that. Listen, I know that Pete's better than me.
I didn't do anything.
Well, they claim that you did then. You should take some credit.
Okay, I will.
I mean,
I never work with OB. I work with Kaz and Ham.
Right.
And, well, and Kaz is just, Kaz likes to be a tough guy.
Kaz is a beauty. They're all beauties. right?
Yes, they are. So you were on Saturday?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we did. Saturday was rough. That was probably their worst game of the year. And that's saying something because, you know, you're talking about losing to Jacksonville at home,
yep.
giving up 17 in the fourth quarter. But Saturday was awful.
I feel like I wouldn't have given up five picks on Saturday if I were a quarterback.
Matt Barkley had a rough, rough, rough day.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that bandwagon was building. And it just that was a massive crash on the Edens.
So we got to ease into Hamp. One game left. We got to ease into the segment with Hamp. That's coming up.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
He's the worst quarterback that has played in the NFL the last 5 years.
Period.
Loser. And that's embarrassing. We look like losers.
And they weren't ready. Weren't ready.
He went from all Sean to some Sean to no Sean in about a month here. If you're not going to help us, get out of the damn way.
Period.
It's almost like he's paralyzed by indecision. And folks,
I got a better word for it, Danny. I'm a could it be possible this kid takes scared the death pill.
Dan Hampton is always driven by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Let's bring the Hall of Famer number 99 on the show. Hamp, Merry Christmas. How was it yesterday?
Merry Christmas to you, Mr. Pete, and all the listeners. You know, how was it yesterday? Well, it was 2 days ago. Christmas was great. But I was thankful that we had to get that bear squirmish out of the way before everyone wanted to have a breakdown around the Christmas tree.
You know, Carmen's here, and we were comparing notes because you and I worked together for a year, and now he's hosting the post-game show with the Bears. And I forgot to ask you, now, when you're watching the game, Mark, with Hamp, is he still get up and throw stuff at the TV and scream and cuss like you've never heard before?
I think, Hampo, you can confirm this, but early in the year you were there, and now you're kind of just sort of resigned to the fate of the club. Is that about right?
And that in itself is really distressing to me because, obviously, we care desperately about not only the team doing well, but being, something we can respect and admire. And, you know, at some point during the course of the season, it started going down the drain. And now apathy has almost kicked in. But I've got to tell you, at the beginning of the game last week, the great legend himself, Ed Obradovich, they did a pan of the stadium. And
And Tom, you weren't there yet. It was just Lil Dan, me, and Tosh. And OB had the look of someone that's seen a ghost.
Yeah.
And he said, I've been going to Bear games since I was a little kid. I played for them. I watched them now. You know, I've been doing this a long time. He goes, I've never seen a stadium that empty at kickoff. And all that being said, it's not just us. You know, and of course we love being there for the fans on WGN. You know, watching the team. You know, prodding them and critiquing them. But now the everyday fan is saying, "I got better stuff to do. I don't care."
Yeah.
And you know what? That's the sad part, and that's what George McCaskey needs to understand. John Fox has allowed a malaise of indifference to the greatest fan base of any sport, of any team in the United States. And that in itself, like I said, you know, okay, how many times can I throw something, and discuss before you say, okay, we're doing the same thing every week. What about this shot?
I mean, I walked in on Sunday because, you know, I do other work before I come in. And, I mean, you guys were talking politics. That was what was going on. Like, it was, they were so bad.
There was nothing to talk about on
Saturday. They were so bad. It was such a miserable performance that you might as well talk about something else. And I mean, you're as diehard as there is, right?
And we all, you know, over the last month, you know, Matt Barkley has shown flashes that has piqued our interest, and we say, hey, could he possibly? Well, you know, could we have found? Well, he is basically prodded into a 5-interception day that, you know, he looks like Chase Jr. on the field. And then Jordan Howard, who we've all grown to, you know, to admire and love watching his running style this year, but we've got an offensive coordinator that refuses to build the offense around his success, and it's all just a bucket of futility. And yes, there's a point where you hit like this point of no return, where you say, I'm sick of it. I am sick of it. And,
right.
You know, and bless the whatever 40,000 Bear fans that did venture out on Christmas Eve, because it would, you know, hey, it's embarrassing enough. It was a topic in the locker room. Not only for the Bears, but for the Washington Redskins. And by the way, the Washington Redskins were roadkill Monday night by Chico and the Carolina Panthers.
Yep.
They scrape themselves up. They have a short week of practice. They come on a Saturday. They have to travel Friday. They only have one day. And they come in and they slap us around like we're some kind of, Christmas doll. And we don't put up any fight, zero. And then after the game, in the post-locker game interviews, everyone said, oh, well, I've got to do this and I got to do that. Well, nobody does anything. And that is, again, the malaise that has kind of matriculated down through the organization, where everybody kind of gets the same old, oh, we tried hard, and that's good enough. Well, it's not good enough.
We're talking with Hall of Famer number 99, Dan Hampton. Back to the fans for a second, because I give money to the Bears. I'm a season ticket holder, and you're right. We didn't want to go to the game. We have a community of people. My brother Ed has season tickets. I have season tickets. I share them with my brother Dave, my buddy Bob Lanigan. We all get together and tailgate, and that in itself is so much fun. But this season, we didn't do it because no one wanted to go to the games after the Bears were losing, and we could not even give away the tickets for Christmas Eve. No one wanted them. Free tickets. No one wanted our tickets.
Well, my lovely bride told me she was, and again, she's, I don't want to say indifferent about football, but she's not a huge fan and all that, and whatever happens, happens, and it doesn't affect her life like it does, obviously, OB and Kaz and I. We went driving to a bridge on the way. But she told me last week, she goes, I've got a lot of friends that are basically passing on free
Green Bay Packer tickets. Okay, it was 8 degrees, 10 degrees, whatever. Yep. But still, I, in my lifetime, cannot remember anyone passing on free Green Bay Packer tickets.
Right.
And you know what? And as you said, your downward spiral up, you know, the drain of a season that this has been, there, you, this is, we're not, you, we weren't playing against the New England Patriots, the Denver Broncos. This was the second easiest schedule of any team in pro football. And so for this debacle, and trust me, we are now, I think, installed as an underdog on the road against Minnesota. So if we lose in Minnesota, and, you know, who's to say, that would be a 3-win season. It has not occurred for the Chicago Bears since 1972. Now, how many of the listeners do we have that even remember or were even born in 1972 to remember?
Was that Neil Armstrong in 72?
No, that would be Armstrong. His first year was 78.
78?
This was Neil Armstrong was 1978, 1980, and 1981.
Okay.
What was the defensive coordinator's name? And I remember listening to Doug Buffon and Butkus and Obradovich.
Abe Gibron was the coach in 70.
Abe Gibron.
And they telling stories about how pathetic it was, and it was a joke, and they knew they were a mockery. And for us to basically fall back into that type of a position in the NFL, like I said, guys, look, these coaches, John Fox and the rest of this group, they're just passing through. Ed Obradovich calls Klaus, me, we're Bears for life. It hurts us to the bone. And nobody's, you know, shouting from the rafters saying, this cannot continue. We've got to stop it.
Yeah.
It's almost like we're going to drive this thing into the offseason, and everybody's going to run for cover and start it up again in August.
Right.
That's
exactly what they're going to do. Hamp, hold on a second. We're going to check traffic, and we'll talk some more to Dan Hamp. 720 WGN, Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran. Dan Hampton is always driven by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. On the phone with us, Hall of Famer number 99, Dan Hampton. Dan, what did little Dan get for Christmas? A few weeks ago, you brought up the fact he may get coal. He's had a bad year. Please tell me he got some gifts.
Well, and again, he's really been quite good this year. There's been a couple of issues with the grades, but like all little kids, hey, it's a great time of year and you want to get him something nice. But he's been pretty industrious. I was telling Cochran, 2-3 weeks ago when the snow was coming, he's got a four-wheeler and a snowplow on it, and
yep.
he's got his own little enterprise.
Yep.
And so he needed new gloves, he needed some boots, and a big coat. Get this, they got coats that have batteries in it, and it's like electronic coat that keeps you warm. Imagine that.
That's anyway. Cheating to me. That's cheating.
He's also Hamp. He's
the same thing. Suck it up.
Suck it up. Yes.
He's also the light technician on the show, Hamp. Right? I mean, the guy, little Dan's been doing lighting up OB.
And OB wants to know why all the lights are focusing on him, and we're just basking in the reflective glory. But you know, he got a. He got one of those drones, and hey, you know, it's a great time of year. It's great to see the joy on the face. That was great.
And just to let you know, little Dan isn't little. How big is your son now? Because in fifth grade, he was as big as me. So that was three years ago.
I don't know. He's getting bigger. Almost 6'2", 210, something like that. He's an eighth grader, but he'll probably, obviously go out for football next fall, but he's kind of in a growth spurt, and he's doing well. And like I said, a lot of the listeners are saying, "Wait a minute, you bought your kid clothes, and you think that's a present?" He's growing out of everything pretty fast, so he's glad to get new stuff when he gets it.
Hey, Hamp, before you go, are you drafting for need, or are you taking the best player available as we think about the Bears' future?
Well, you know, when you the best player available is when you have a team that's somewhat prepared to make a run. We're not making a run, obviously. So you draft for need, you know, and OB made a heartfelt plea about, even though Ryan Pace, and I like Ryan Pace, and a lot of the stuff that he has, you know, Akeem Hicks is a good thing. Those inside linebackers, Danny Trevathan and McPhee, and a lot of these are good players and pieces you can build around. But if we would have kept Matt Slauson, then Cody Whitehair would not have been a necessity, and we could have drafted a tight end. And Leonard Floyd may be a difference maker. He might be. But right now I see a kid that makes a lot of mistakes. He'll make five or six bad plays before the one good one, and now he's in his second concussion protocol. So, and instead of that, why wouldn't we have wanted to try to find a great safety or a speed receiver?
Yep.
And Kevin White, another, you know, here's a guy
bust.
That, hey, bust is the word you got to use.
Yeah.
Oh, well, he's been hurt. Well, guess what, folks? If you are not capable of being healthy enough to contribute, you're a bust. That's the only way you can cut it. So I'm saying tight end. I watched the playoff games yet. Oh, no, they're almost like playoff games. Pittsburgh and Baltimore. Baltimore had no offense if it wasn't for their tight end. The Kansas City Chiefs, Kelce, he had over 100 yards and a touchdown at halftime. They are basically the venue that a lot of smart offenses are utilizing today, and we've got a bunch of nobodies. And even Zach's a good player, but Zach can't stay healthy as well. So
yep.
there's a lot of positions of need, but those are just a couple.
Who do you root for? Hamp, we'll talk to you on Friday. I'm in all week, okay?
Well, listen, have a great week, and let's enjoy our run-up to 2017 and hope the folks in the tower realize, hey, this plane's going the wrong direction. They got to make a change.
Thank you, Hamp. Talk to you Friday.
Merry Christmas.
All right. Dan Hampton, always driven by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. We were talking about the Bears. Now, Al, you were at the game on Saturday?
Yes. Good morning, Pete. How are you?
Good morning.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, I took my son. My brother's a season ticket holder, and he tickets. And, you know, I really enjoyed the game experience. But before the game, they gave away thank you towels. And ironically, they were white. So was it management who was trying to say something, you know? We wave the white towel. We're surrendering.
So they gave away white towels at the game, and they were raising the white flag, basically. Is that what you're saying, Al?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
And now here's another thing I was thinking while on hold. Maybe it's time for the McCaskies to say, you know what, we've given it our best shot, but really bring in an owner who's serious about bringing Warner back to Chicago.
I feel like we have this conversation every single year, and they'll never get rid of the team. That's their bread and butter right there. They're never going to get rid of the team.
A lot of people think when Virginia goes, that might...
What else are they going to do?
Take the money and live dreams?
I don't know. I don't see them getting rid of the team anytime soon. Thank you, Al, for the phone call.
Let's go.
3, 2, 1...
The Steve Cochran Show presents Breakfast with a Blackhawk, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
.720 WGN, Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran this week. Breakfast with a Blackhawk, the NHL alumni game, Blues versus the Blackhawks, happening this Saturday. One of the Blackhawks alumni playing in that game joins us now. It's Brent Sopel. Brent, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, man, are you pumped to be playing against Gretzky?
Absolutely. You know, Wayne Gretzky is the best player in the world, and it's one guy that I haven't had an opportunity to. You know, you take a look at the top five guys in NHL scoring. I've played against Lemieux and Jagr and I played with Mark Messier, but I have never had the opportunity. I've met Wayne many times, but to be on the same ice surface with him will be a dream come true.
Well, I think it's interesting that he's playing in the Blues and Blackhawks alumni game because no one remembers him playing for St. Louis. He played for how many games, Mark?
18 games, Brent.
18 games, that's it, and he's playing in the alumni game.
Well, if I'm the St. Louis Blues, that's the first guy I'm calling. I'm not calling Chris Pronger. I'm not calling Martin Verdeur. I could care less about that. We're talking about the best player in the world. Wayne, are you going to come play for us? I don't care if you played a half a shift. That's still one game. You're on my list. You're number one.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, you want Wayne Gretzky to play on your team. Now, do you look at this game as an exhibition? Are you going to try to show off a little bit? I mean, there's some guys that just go out there and have fun, and there's other guys that take this as a real game.
Well, what am I going to show off my blocking skills? No, you know, it's fun to get together with a lot of guys that you don't see on a regular basis. You know, I have especially a lot of guys on their side of the. You know, I played against majority of the guys on their side in St. Louis, but I haven't seen those guys and caught up with those guys for years. And you know, Ben Eager, you know, guys that I played with and won Stanley Cup with. You know, I don't see them on a regular basis. You know, life's changed. People live in different places. So it'll be great to catch up to everybody. But at the end of the day, we're athletes. We want to win. I remember last year in Minnesota, the game, you know, kind of had an easy pace, but getting towards the end of it, everybody, both sides wanted to win.
Right. Of course.
Adam Oates, Brett Hull. I mean, we got family drama going on here with Brett being on the ice here. Are you going to, anybody you want to hit, Brent? I know this is a alumni family game, but maybe just a little check into the boards wouldn't hurt someone.
Oh no, there's some bad blood. You know, I know Keith Tkachuk and I had many battles. You know, Brett Hull and I had a few when he was there, and then when he was in Detroit. Also, Chris Pronger. You know, there's a few guys there on the list. We'll see who I get in front of first off.
How much did we love to hate Pronger in 2010 playing Philadelphia in the finals? I mean, everybody loved to hate that guy.
Well, he was, you know, obviously he's one of those players that. You want it on your team, but you absolutely despise. He was, he's great at everything we did. He's, you know, he could be physical. He'd be in your face. He'd be ugly. He'd be one of the dirtiest players. But in the same token, he'd find a way to put up 50, 60, 70 points every single year. So,
right.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I think the fans had more fun, and the media had more fun with it at 2010. But at the end of the day, we did what we wanted to do, and I don't care who it was, what it was, we end up winning.
Was it the cover of the Sun Times that had Pronger in a dress? Or do you guys remember that? What was that? Remember? Or was it the back page of the Sun Times?
It doesn't surprise me. I don't remember that. Everybody was all over everybody. I'm sure there was social media, there was people tweeting and sending everything about Chris Pronger. But I don't remember that one.
I'm verifying this for you right now, Pete. Continue. We will have it in a moment.
We're talking with
dress.
We're talking with former Blackhawk Brent Sobel playing in the alumni game happening this Saturday. Where are you right now? It sounds like you're in a locker room.
You're absolutely right. I'm in the gym. I got 3 hours in the gym today to get ready.
3 hours? What are you training for? I mean, besides the game on Saturday, but what are you doing for 3 hours?
I lift weights for an hour. I do cardio for an hour, and I'll do yoga for an hour.
Cardio for an hour.
You were right, by the way. It was an insert in the Tribune.
Oh, it's in the Tribune.
Yeah, but he looks adorable.
Pronger in a dress.
Yeah.
That's
nice.
Brent, let's talk about your teammates. Daniel Carcillo, Car Bomb. Does he get in a fight? Yes or no?
It's funny. I had this conversation the last week with somebody. You really want to make an impression, you might as well get into a fight. So I'll have to say no. I think Carbon is past his days of doing that.
I had the opportunity to do a bowling charity event with Daniel Carcillo a few years ago. He's so mellow off the ice.
Huge transformation for Carbon, right? He's doing a lot of stuff off the ice for guys who have been concussed, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about Jamal Myers? Or Mayers, can he still play? He's still in great shape.
Yeah, no, I think he's still in great shape. I skated with him a couple weeks ago, so I think out of anybody, I think he could fight anybody. You know, he played in St. Louis, he lives there, so
right.
I think he got to have a little fun with this one.
Troy Murray, I think Troy's going to go out there and give it his all on Saturday.
Yeah, you know what? Let's hope Troy's 100% after his, I think, he had a couple surgeries this summer. So let's just hope that that Troy's 100% and makes it through injury free.
Well, he had the goal against the North Stars. He had the little breakaway, raised up the stick. I think that Troy's going to be hoping to do something like that again here, Brent. I mean, what would it mean for you to have a moment like that? Lift the stick, score against the Blues, the whole deal.
You know, I'm happy. I passed the day of, you know, many, many years ago scoring goals. I don't do that very often anymore, even now. So I'm just happy to get out there. First one is try not to get hurt. Second is just to win.
Do not get hurt. Another guy, exactly. One of your – you now, how well do you know Reed Simpson?
I've known Reed for many, many years. Obviously, good Canadian boy from not far from where I grew up and came from, so I know Reed really well.
I feel like everybody in Chicago knows Reed. If you don't know him, you've seen him at a bar somewhere. He is everywhere. He's at every single concert. He's at every bar. He's at every baseball game. I see Reed everywhere. Everywhere.
You're absolutely right. I don't. I think you can probably find maybe 10 people in this city that doesn't know who Reed is. So,
right.
He's the talk of town. He's one of those guys that bounces around everywhere, has fun with life, and he's enjoying every second of life, which is the way it should be.
And still in great shape, by the way. I feel like hockey players age gracefully.
Well,
besides,
I wouldn't go that far.
Besides Bobby Hull.
Exactly. I've seen some hockey players and the way they've looked, and I refuse to be one of those guys. But I think it's embedded in us. That's what we've been doing from basically the first time we could skate. So it's something where I gotta, I enjoy keeping myself in shape. That's my lifestyle, but it's also a mental relief from life when I'm in the gym.
Right
On the ice for the Hawks right now, you got. Corey Crawford back. Scott Darling played really well, right, Brent? I mean, the Hawks were 6-2-1 when he was in there with Crawford out with the appendectomy, and then Crow comes back on Friday, and he looks like himself. So that's a good problem to have. But is it fair to say Scott Darling's probably a number one goalie at some point coming down the pipe here?
That's a big step. You know, when you have to take over the pipes and be a number one and know that you're going to play 55 to 65 games. It's a different mindset, completely different. He's still very early in it. You know, he did a great job, obviously. Joe Quenneville said at one point in time during that streak, the best players so far this year consistently has been the goaltending. And you win with goaltending. That's why they're sitting where they are in the West. And in my opinion, I haven't seen the Blackhawks play a good game yet so far. And which is very scary. I don't think that they haven't fired on all cylinders. The penalty kill is the worst in the NHL.
Right.
The power play is middle of the pack. So to be sitting first in the West and not have played a really solid game yet, it's pretty scary.
I feel like we talk about the power play and the penalty kill every single year. Every year. Oh, the Blackhawks really need to work on their power play. The PK is not as good as it should be. Every year we talk about this.
Well, special teams is a huge, a huge component
of course.
The way the game is. You know, you can break down all these dumb analytics, and that's where a lot of things get lost. But you win, you win and lose hockey games. And when you talk about points, 1 point here, 2 points here, those are big points where you could look down and say, we may have home ice advantage, or some other teams maybe they don't make the playoffs by 1 or 2 points. So that's why we talk about these, the power play and penalty kill. It's the same thing. It's sometimes it's boring. It's cliche. There's a reason it's cliche, because it's that important.
When you won a championship back in 2010 with the Blackhawks, you look back at that year, pretty magical year here in Chicago. What comes to mind? Is there something that sticks out that year?
As the camaraderie at what we had as a group. I've never been a part of a team that were so close to each other. You have a couple guys here, a couple guys there, but everybody got along, and you could feel it, the way everybody cared for each other, the way everybody looked after each other in every circumstance. Didn't matter where it was, on the road, on the home, family, work, whatever those situations are, it was a little bit of everything.
Is Marian Hossa's production? I mean, and I know he's a little banged up right now, but leading the team in goals, do you expect that to continue by the end of the year? I mean, it's pretty incredible for a 37-year-old guy.
Is 37. More... Are you sure he's 37? I thought he was 50. He's playing fantastic.
It's unbelievable. I mean, I'm wondering if, you know, you're a guy, Brent, that probably knows a little bit more than me here. Is it more right place, right time, or is it something that you think is going to sustain for the rest of the year?
You know, it'll be very close. It all depends on health. And, you know, let's go back to last, you know, I won my NHL pool last year for work because I had the Blackhawks losing in game 7 in the first round, and everybody's all upset that the Hawks won. You're right. You know, it was a tough loss, but at some point, you have to realize there's your human bodies that get completely annihilated day after day, night after night. And Marian Hossa had an opportunity to go home, rest his body, work out, regain his strength, do the things that he needed to do for his body. And as every year you get older, it gets tougher. And when you've been in that many finals, your body never repairs itself. So it was finally a summer where he could actually do the things he really needed to do. Then obviously you can see right now what right. he's doing. So it doesn't surprise me one little bit. My concern is that, you know, moving forward here with these little bumps and bruises that he has, is he able to shake those and not have those linger on? So he definitely could continue as long as that health stays exactly where it was before these few bumps and bruises.
God, he looks so great this year. And at 37 years old, you're absolutely right. The NHL alumni game, Blues versus the Blackhawks, happening on Saturday. Brent Sobel is playing against Wayne Gretzky, the greatest hockey player ever.
I don't know about that. I think Wayne Gretzky's playing against me, no question.
Yeah.
I'm not playing against Wayne. Let's get this right. Wayne.
If you have the opportunity, Brent, if you have the opportunity to check him during the game, are you going to do it?
Oh, absolutely.
This is your chance. Gretzky, he's got to think that he's got a target on his back because everybody wants to play against him, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, he knows he has a target and he loves it. And he embraces who he is and what he does for, you know, for the NHL and what he does for the game of hockey. So he knows it, and he definitely loves every second of it, too.
And do you stick around for the game on Monday?
No, I got to come back. I'll be actually in your studio for a pregame for the second. So I'll be there just for the game. I got to come back, and then, you know, that work thing jumps into play again.
Got it. All right, Brent Sobel. Brent, have fun on Saturday, man. Great to talk to you.
All right, gentlemen. Have a great day. Thanks.
All right, take care. I mean, that's got to be a huge thrill for him, playing against number 99.
If I'm Wayne Gretzky and the Blues call me up, hello, it's the St. Louis Blues. I don't even remember being in St. Louis. That was before he was on his way to the Rangers, where he played the final 3 years of his career after right. L.A. 18 games. You want me to do what? Play in your alumni game? All right, I love hockey. I'll do it.
He scored 37 points in 31 games.
It's incredible.
Wayne Gretzky. He'll be playing on Saturday, NHL alumni game, Blues versus the Blackhawks.
Statistically, you can make the argument that Gretzky's the most dominant player in any sport. I mean, just off the charts.
Oh, I agree 100%. I don't think anyone would argue with you about that.
I would argue with me about that. Like, somehow I try to find, like, some way that Michael Jordan could
That's
be greater.
That's just the way you are. Yeah. Oh, I forgot about Jordan. Yeah. That's right.
I would try to, but I it would be a hard argument to do.
720 WGN. We're live on CLTV for a few more minutes. And 720 WGN, Pete McMurray, Mark Carmen, Dave Schwann is here. Cochran is off until next Monday. We were talking to Brent Sobel. The alumni game happening Saturday, the Blues versus the Blackhawks, and Chris Pronger is playing for the Blues, the guy that everyone in Chicago loves to hate.
It's the Chris Prongers, the Dino Ciccarellis of mm-hmm. the world. I love a good old alumni game. See everybody out there, see how they're looking, see if a little competitiveness comes into it. It's enjoyable.
Kelly Chase, who a lot of Chicagoans hate because he played for the Blues. I grew up in Peoria. My brother was an assistant GM for the Peoria Rivermen. And when Kelly was coming up, it was Kelly Chase and Tony Twist. And I would go over to my brother's house when I was in, you know, eighth grade, freshman year of high school. These guys would be at my brother Ed's house for a barbecue. Nicest guys ever.
See,
next thing you know, they go into the NHL. And, of course, everybody in Chicago hates Kelly Chase.
Well, it's survival, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is how I make my living. This is how I get paid. I mean, this dude, I mean, Kelly Chase was he led the league in penalty minutes. I mean, that's how he did his thing.
Right.
I mean, you talk
hated
about,
here in Chicago.
Well, you talk
one
about,
of the nicest guys that I've ever met.
Right. Well, I mean, Carbom. Right. You mentioned Carcillo before.
Yeah.
Guys who, you know, he's not exactly a huge dude, but he went.
I'm 5'10". I want to say he's maybe 5'9", 5'10".
Right.
At the most.
And he's not.
No.
Ripped either.
Uh-uh.
But yet, that's how he survived in the NHL. Because, I mean, the talent level for a lot of these guys is, I mean, we're talking about tenths of a percentage of and then
right.
How do you get there? How do you survive?
He becomes a fighter.
Right.
So you got Carcillo playing. Adam Burrish, I forgot to mention.
There's another guy.
Burrish is coming back.
Yeah. Well, how did Adam Burrish survive in the NHL for as long as he survived? And, right. And even guys like, I mean, when you're talking about undersized Blackhawks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who are the most popular?
Patrick Kane.
Right?
5'8"?
But super skilled.
Okay.
I'm talking about, how is this blanking on Christmas? I'm getting old. Stitches to the face. Now a Montreal Canadian. Playing, won a cup in 2013.
Yes. Hold on.
Come on. Help me.
Shaw.
Yes. Thank you.
Andrew Shaw.
I mean, how does that...
How quickly we forget when they move out of town.
I mean, I was at his comeback game just a month ago. I was standing there going crazy for the guy. Way to go, Andrew. You were a grinder. I mean, how does that guy make it in the NHL?
He is a grinder. You're right.
I'm going to go to the front of the net and be a complete lunatic. You're 5'8", 160 pounds.
312 area code. Ask Mark the best players in each league. Okay, you were talking about Gretzky being the greatest of all time over all the leagues. Who's the greatest NFL player of all time?
The greatest NFL player of all time.
A person that dominated. So you're thinking maybe
Jim Brown.
A quarterback or a running back? Walter Payton? Dick Butkus? If you had to choose one.
I mean, it's sacrilegious in this city.
Stop it. Don't even.
To say Jim Brown, but the guy ever...
Stop it. Walter Payton. Those teams of the 70s, horrible.
True. Brown was incredibly dominant.
Basketball, do we agree? Michael Jordan?
We agree, Michael.
Okay. Baseball?
Babe Ruth. It's got to be. The guy had more home runs than the entire league, and he was a
You're
pitcher.
Not going to Pete Rose?
No.
Mariano Rivera?
Mariano was great. Ryan Terrio. Right
dominated?
There. Yeah, I mean, a lot of guys right there.
NHL? Gretzky?
By a wide margin, yes.
This will be a fun game to watch on Saturday.
No doubt.
Just to watch Gretzky and see, how old is he? 54, maybe?
Let's look up the Wayne-inator.
55 years old.
I'm going to say...
He's 55.
Is that right?
Yep. Gelman just told me. So 55, see if he can still play and skate.
See, you know that people are being athletic later and later in life? You know that Willie Gault, remember Willie Gault,
mm-hmm.
1985 Super Bowl champion bear, he just set a record for sprinting in the 100 meters. He's running it like 0.5 tenths of a second slower than
Come
he
on.
Did. I'm telling you. Willie Gault, still
he's
flying
a great around. Athlete.
I mean, think about that.
He was a great athlete, still is. And I want to say that he tried out for the bobsled team on the Olympics
that
too.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. That's absolutely correct.
All right,
11 years in the NFL, then going bobsled. How does that happen?
Because if you're a great athlete, you can do just about anything. Think about it. Michael Jordan, in the prime of his career, leaves basketball to go play baseball. Even though he wasn't very good, he was still he was okay.
Underrated performance. Hit .267 in the fall league. 30 steals, 50 RBIs, hit 3 bombs, played an okay right field, minus some of the highlights that we saw.
Jordan played in the Crosstown Classic, the exhibition game, the Cubs versus the Sox. I'll never forget that. I went to that game at Wrigley Field.
Hit the double off Dave Otto, who ended up
Was it Otto?
Yes.
Of course.
Double down the line off Otto.
Did Dave give it up on purpose, or was he trying to strike out Jordan?
I'm assuming you'd have to ask Dave, but I thought it was the best pitch that Otto ever threw, and Michael bounced it down the left field line.
I love Otto. Great guy. All right, as we say goodbye to CLTV, we'll remain on 720 WGN. This is the first time that this crew here at WGN has worked together. Gelman, thank you very much. Least nice work. They're working behind the glass. You can't see them, but good work today.
They were fantastic.
Yes. So we had a few things happen behind the scenes, and you guys picked it up. You made it happen. And Carmen, I've never worked with you before. This has been fun.
I really enjoyed it, Pete. Great to be here. And
are you in all week?
I'm in all week.
And it's in New York, right?
Yeah.
And we're going to have him on Wednesday for the game. Thanks again to Coach Fitz. Remember, Northwestern football, the bowl game, Pinstripe Bowl happening on Wednesday.
Our pregame starts at noon. Extended situation going on into live football at 1 o'clock.
Dave Ennett, very nervous. He's got to do the game from the end zone at Yankee Stadium.
I have a pregame.
I don't know if nervous is the word, but I got to build up.
I got a pregame with Afadi Odenebo, whose
parents. What'd you call me?
Yes. Okay. His parents moved here so his mom could be a doctor from Nigeria.
Really?
And he tells, you would love this guy. The stories he tells about is Afadi. Football, not for you.
I'll see him on Wednesday. I'll be here.
Yes.
Here all week.